Morning, Gamecock fans. Today's Tuesday, April 7th, the year of our Lord 2026. This is Coffee with JC Sherbert. Hope you're doing well today and having a wonderful morning and a wonderful week so far. Certainly, that's the case here. Programming note on the Chief Sports Network, Jamie Bradford's on vacation for the rest of the week. He's going to pop back in later in the week to talk a little about the baseball series at Missouri and some other things, probably Thursday and Friday. But he's on vacation with his family. So we're going to have on the show, the morning show, we're going to do combo shows for the rest of the week, specials, 10 to 1. So it won't be starting an hour later, getting out an hour earlier, I would guess, 10 to 1. No, it starts normal time, my bad. So 10 and then 1, so we'll cut it early. But we'll have Rob Williams, Preston Thorne, Matt Anderson in today. Mad Dog and I will be along and continue on with Matt in the second and third hour. I got messed up there with the time because of the central time zone. I'm trying to plan my own schedule, right? But that's the case for the rest of the week. Matt Smith will be in. Rob will be in. Matt Anderson will be in. Mad Dog and I will be in. We'll still have Smorgasbord. Still have Wide Open Wednesday and all the things you love about ITG. But Jamie needs to break like everybody else. It's good that he can take that time off, and we're looking forward to kind of filling in and doing some different things with ITG for the rest of the week. So stay tuned for that. Sports Talk streams tonight, every night on the Chief Sports app. So check that out as well. Four Quarter Friday is still going strong. The boys are out at the Forest Acres Classic this week. One of the best baseball tournaments in the Southeast, right there in Columbia, South Carolina. Lots of great high school baseball coverage and more for you on Four Quarter Friday. Check out their YouTube channel. Go hit that subscribe button, youtube.com/@Four Quarter Friday. Also, don't forget the newsletter, InsideTheGamecocks.com. Got a big basketball piece coming out today, men's basketball. The transfer portal opens. The women's basketball transfer portal is already open. Today's focus in the newsletter is going to be on the men. I talked about this yesterday. There's a bigger budget. If you look at Pete Nakos's article about who's going to spend what, projecting this year, Carolina will be able to spend with most of the top teams. The problem is, if you're spending the same as someone else, you got to kind of still piece it together with all that and maybe have to pay a little more because of the shape of the program. But that's what's happening there. And Carolina, of course, Sandico. Kreese DeSandico got in the portal yesterday to the surprise of nobody. And that should be about it. Hayden Assemian, Grant Polk, they're expected back. Cam Scott's expected back as far as the returning players on the roster for Lamont Paris and his team next year. And what'll be a critical season. I mean, it's make the big dance or don't. Yeah, those returning players, there's four of them. Eli Sparkman, I read somewhere, could be back, but he's kind of a scholarship guy, but maybe a walk-on type. But we know who he is. He's been hustling and has been a member of the team for a while. So when you're talking about guys that, 15th guy or whatever, that's, I think he'll be back. But as far as the quote-unquote scholarship guys that were recruited as a scholarship, whether or not he's on scholarship or not, it's irrelevant. But Abu Yarma, who came in with Eli Ellis and with Hayden Assemian from Overtime Elite, he redshirted Cam Scott, of course, redshirted the local product. I heard he's getting a little better. I heard in practice he started playing a little better. So we'll see. It's, I think, in everybody's best interest for him to be a player. How good he can be, who knows? But we'll see what happens there. Hayden Assemian, who I mentioned, who kind of a blue-collar guy, started off strong. And then E.J. Walker took some of his minutes. And then Grant Polk, who is a really good shooter but did not shoot that well in the games. But you can still see the potential there. J.B. and Matt Anderson compared him to former Gamecock Travis Kraft, who – won a game for the Gamecocks with a last-second three against a really good Billy Donovan-led Florida team back in the day. So those guys are coming back. So that's four or five. So you're looking to fill 10 roster spots, and it's going to be a challenge to do that. I think that You have to go, it's still about identifying players, finding players, and finding the right players. And then you got to get them all to play together. I mean, so that was something that somebody said to me yesterday is that's the challenge is, you see teams around the country like Kentucky that spent $22 million allegedly, and didn't make it out of the second round and didn't look great doing it. Iowa State, according to published reports, spent less than South Carolina last year and beat Kentucky's butt by what, 20 in the second round. So it doesn't always equal winning, spending. And that's a fact in college sports these days, as much as everybody wants to make of it. But I think that the idea is if you're serious about the sport, you need to spend along the same lines of some of the teams that went to the Sweet 16, some of the teams that are in the tournament every year, your Tennessees of the world, your Auburns of the world, just in the SEC alone. And it's going to be, between 12 and 15 million for on the high, it's on the high end. Now, you may ask, well, does that mean South Carolina's going to the Sweet 16 or should expect to do that? I think you have to expect the tournament because that's kind of the mandate. That's why the resources were given. And a lot goes into it, as far as winning and losing in college sports, because especially in this league, everybody has good players as well. And so sometimes it just depends on is it your day or the shots falling and all that good stuff. But Michigan just won the national championship last night with five transfers, so that was interesting as well. And basketball, I want to remind everybody, is different than football. Basketball is much more, putting together a team however you can. The transfer thing's been happening in basketball for a long time. A few years ago, Texas Tech and Virginia played for the national championship. This was 2019 before NIL, and they both had tons of transfers on the court. It was unbelievable. So this has been going on in that sport for a while. And with the coming of NIL and then the portal, it's just all free agency, mercenarial. There's very little freshman recruiting that takes place, which some group of five school is going to get wise, or not group of five, but mid-major. That's what we call it in basketball. And they're just going to go get that next level. They're going to have a good coach and then get that next level of freshman that normally could go into a power conference and have a really good freshman year, and you get three or four of them and develop some hidden gems. And then that's the way I think that the mid majors are going to make tournament runs in the future, because it's been all chalk the last couple of years, is take advantage of what's going on. The big schools don't gobble up all the talent. They're busy taking the proven talent from each other and from you. And so that's the deal. South Carolina, what do they need in the transfer portal in basketball? Everything. Combo guards, small forwards, power forwards, centers, bigs. They need everything. I mean, let's not kid ourselves with that. This is another complete revamp, blow it up and start over kind of situation. And that's kind of, in some ways, that's the way the sport is now. I mean, it's just kind of, you just kind of got to expect that each and every year in basketball. That's just how it is. So that's and it's been that way, like I said, for a while. I don't think that it's any kind of damning. There's a lot about Lamont Paris and his tenure here that, I'm not gonna blow sunshine up your behunkus here and say it's been good, because it hasn't. Hasn't been good enough, nearly good enough at all. But I don't think that's a Lamont Paris thing. I think that's a college basketball thing. And that's kind of how I think that sport's going to be that way for a while. You're going to get a new deck of cards every year. And how you play them is important, right? And the hand you're dealt is important. But, credit Jeremiah Donati for doing this, because what I think this does, win or lose, even if it fails, which it could, there's no, I don't know who they're going to get right now. There's a few players out there that I have to, just because of how all this works, you want to kind of keep it quiet. There's a few players out there that are known. Kobe Knox's brother from Arkansas, Carter, is one. I do expect them to target many, many others. But there's a few players that are nice players that they could come in and do it. But then who does everybody else get and all that? But even if it fails, I think what it does is if you spend when you go to get the next coach, they're not sitting there and their agent's not sitting there worried about do you sink resources into men's basketball because the perception is that you don't. And I think that, it goes a long way, to say, no, look, here's what you get, and this is good, and we're going to go toe to toe financially with anybody we can because we're serious about the sport. So, and I think, to give Donati credit, I do think he has been willing to put, I guess, his money where his mouth is, so to speak. Hadn't always worked, did not work in baseball this year. And even with the bumped up resources last year in basketball, it didn't work. But there's reasons for that. I think football, and I said yesterday when I was talking about Garnet Trust, and by the way, the point on that is none of this would be possible without Garnet Trust. I would encourage everyone to, if you can afford the $10 a month, $20 a month to support them, go to garnettrust.com and do that because they're kind of the facilitator. South Carolina is going to spend, five figures over the cap, quote unquote cap, in football this year and close to five figures over the cap in men's basketball. And then the baseball resources are there too for whoever gets the job. And a lot of that's facilitated by Garnet Trust. Now, does all the money come directly from your memberships? A chunk of it does. But then they also have business partnerships that facilitate revenue, media opportunities for the players. They've become, it's not just kind of a NIL collective slush fund kind of thing like most collectives once were. Garnet Trust has evolved more as far as like a independent marketing arm that, it really, honestly, the true nature of it is with the membership money, which is a drop in the bucket compared to what you can make with other entities for true NIL. With the membership money, the deals that they go and get, that allows South Carolina to, working in conjunction with the university to get above the cap, which is what everybody's doing until there is a cap. And the executive order that the president signed, my understanding is that until Congress acts, it's going to be tied up in court. Everybody's proceeding as usual. South Carolina does not need to get into a situation where they're like, oh, well, this executive order happened, so we're just going to cut all the extra. No, you got to spend it. Do I agree with that? Do I think, some basketball player at the college level and that may or may not even make the NBA is worth $5 million? No. But the money in basketball, even at the pro level, has always been a little bit better individually than football because there's less roster spots. So it makes sense for that sport. But anyway, I wanted to explain that about Garnet Trust because some people don't really understand what they're doing with that now in the rev share era. And I'll just say that every school that cares, including South Carolina, has blown past that rev share cap. That money's spent. It's d done. If you want to compete, you got to go above it. Do I like that? Do I like that you're getting five figures plus over the? No. But there's schools like Texas and A&M and Tennessee and places like that are in this conference that South Carolina has to beat. And so you got to match it, and that's what that's all about. It's. They're independent of the university. They don't control hirings and firings, by the way. So, I would just encourage everybody to support Garnet Trust however you can, given the factual reality that it's very important. And the direct quote from someone, high-ranking people within the one person within the university was, "We could not do this without them." And so, I just wanted to talk about it. I mean, I promote them all that I can. I like them. You guys know that. But, take all that out. It's important, and it's going to be important for this portal season in basketball. It's going to be important for whoever the coach is in baseball. And it certainly will continue to be important in football. So just wanted to get that out there. And when I say support, maybe you don't want to pay money every month. Well, maybe you could, buy a hat for one of the players, or Garnet Trust hat, or retweet them or something. Just do what you can for the Garnet Trust. It's not their fault if you disagree with retaining Lamont Paris. They had nothing to do with that. They basically work deals out for the players the coaches choose. It's on the coaches and administration, not Garnet Trust. So I wanted to mention them because they're going to be a big part of this moving forward. But there is a big out of the ACC that I think South Carolina will be looking at pretty closely. Some guys from mid-majors that are really good, some guys that were on the radar last year from the portal. Lamont Paris has been working behind the scenes. I think there's an assistant coach hire that makes sense that's, could be coming, the quote unquote GM role. I don't think they're going to call it the GM. I think that's a situation that is going to work soon. And a lot of this stuff gets done at the Final Four in college basketball coaching because they have the coaches convention and everybody's in Indianapolis. And so was Lamont Paris. He was talking to different assistants and all that. So I know from a contact that ran into him and saw him do it. So he's been working behind the scenes. I know the information hasn't been flowing about that, and that makes people nervous. But trust me, they have been. Now, will it work out? I don't know. I have my doubts. I'm not going to. I don't ever like to say it's not going to work until it's not going to work, but we'll just have to see who they get and, will they spend wisely? And then even if they do, teams got to come together. In basketball, you can have way more talent than the other team, and you don't play together, and you're throwing up bricks and wild shots and a lot of selfish basketball. It's not like football. You can play selfish in football, but man, you do that and you loaf and things like that, you're going to get your clock cleaned by your opponent. I mean, you're going to be physically damaged. And so there's a little bit more motivation on the football field. Not that there's not lows. I mean, heck, I saw Miami and Ole Miss teams in the playoffs. Oregon, Indiana took their soul away. They're just jogging around and stuff. Dante Moore with that first pass. I mean, that's not 7-on-7, my man. But I think just the way the game of football goes, it's harder to be selfish, right? You can be, but it's hard. I think in basketball, you can really, in many ways, at the pro level, we glorify the individual way more than the teams. And so you get that. And so in college, you got to play as a team. It's a tournament sport. You have to, play smart and all that. And win your game. So those are all the challenges of hoops. But we'll see what happens. I think that, so far, as far as the administration goes, Garnet Trust, the people like that, they've done their part. And now we'll see if Lamont Paris and his staff, whoever may be on it, or joining it, can get it done. But and again, one more word on Garnet Trust. They do work closely with the coaching staff. And again, they don't, Mark and Jeremy aren't talent scouts. They don't decide who to take. They just work with agents and have great relationships and get the nitty-gritty done. All right. And then when the players get there, it's their responsibility to get them out and get them to earn their NIL over NIL. Like they set up events, the Darius Rucker concert, for example. There'll be a bunch of football players there. Garnet Trust guys are running that, right? So I wanted to explain kind of what they do. I talked about it yesterday a little bit, but wanted to explain kind of what they do. And I'll write a little bit about it too in the newsletter today, where I'll lay out more inside the gamecocks.com if you want to sign up for that. Football, 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 right? It's coffee, JC. Stop talking about basketball. I will. So press conferences, coordinators yesterday. And look, you can go listen to the press conference. You don't need me to break it down for you. I'm not breaking down press conferences. You read some of these articles, and they're good articles. Don't get me wrong. I hate on some articles sometimes, but I think the when you write about a coach, what he said and what we think it means. I think that's interesting. I think it's interesting to kind of psychoanalyze what a coach says. But, coordinators are a little different than the head coach. The head coach here and everywhere else seems to be like, I don't know. It's like they write it out and it's literary analysis. What did Hemingway mean when he wrote this? What is the symbolism? That kind of thing. Good Lord. Got enough going on in college sports. Can we let AI take over coaches' press conferences and just give us answers? Fat chance. So anyway, but Kendall Briles and Clayton White spoke yesterday, and I do kind of I listen to all of them and try to get topics and pull things out that are interesting that then I can kind of go back and analyze and research and talk to contacts about and things like that. And Clayton White yesterday had some interesting points that kind of back up a greater point. He was asked about the defensive tackles, and I've been going hard in the paint about that group, this spring, because all the feedback I've heard has been positive. Jordan Thomas was a positive thing the other day. You have Gabriel Brown-Lodindy back, Troy Pike's back, Kelby Collins is in. You have Noah Clark's doing really well. Aiden Harris is doing really well as a freshman. Who am I missing there? I mentioned Jordan Thomas. Who's the fourth one? Tomiwa Adorojaiye, who I think will start. So there's a lot of guys there now. There's more and a lot of talent, a lot of youngish talent, a lot of older talent. They did a good job. Travion Robertson said, speaking of NIL and the portal, that he hand selected those guys. I trust him, and I think he's a really good evaluator. And so when you can hand select your three defensive tackles, I think that speaks to kind of the operation of roster management at South Carolina in football right now, the last year's result notwithstanding. And I continue to say, I don't think that was a 4-8 roster. I think that was a better roster that lost eight games for a lot of reasons. But a lot of folks say it was youth and lack of leadership. I do think those things were factors. I wouldn't hang it on that though. Wouldn't hang it on that. I think the offensive plan shot him in the foot. Coaching on and execution on the offensive line shot him in the foot. And then there is the opponent factor. I mean, let's face it, the eight SECs, if you'd have drawn names out of a hat, you'd have probably ended up with a better schedule, more favorable schedule for South Carolina last year. And they were in a bunch of games. So, I'm not trying to, they could have won several games. I think given the opponent factor, and this is just an aside, I'll get back to the D tackles in a second, that had it been a little lighter, had Carolina drawn, say, like an Auburn or Florida or even Tennessee, and then, held on against some of the bigger teams, and then maybe caught LSU later and Missouri later. I think it's probably 7-8 win team. And then you look at youth and leadership and go, yeah, Of course, they win eight games and Lenoris has a really good year. He's not here this year. So maybe sometimes in life and in football too, bad things happen to set up for good things. And let's hope that's what happens this year. All right, so if that happens, the defensive tackles are going to be a big part of it, and really the whole defensive front. But Clayton White was talking about it yesterday. He talked about different types of guys, and he used the phrase that I don't want to use, but because that group was just so good, it stands on its own. But he says more like the 2024 group. Eddie's right. Last year, you had. Pikes was in over the summer and he was kind of coming along. He didn't have Travion Robertson either. Brown-Lodindy banged up a little bit, kind of at that nose spot. He said there's two spot, they call it nose and three technique. It's not a true nose, but the bigger guy and then the smaller guy. And then they'll mix and match depending on down and distance. But, and he talked about how there were bigger guy, bigger, you had both with, the 2024 group. And you did. You know, DeAndre Jules was a guy that got hurt, but got in there and played some. You know, TJ Sanders, I think you would probably consider him the nose and Tonka the three. But he was still 6'3", 293. I mean, he wasn't a huge guy. But you have a lot of diverse body types and guys that are good at different things. And he talked about that. You know, you got a Brownlow Dindy and a Jordan Thomas and a Noah Clark that are 300-plus, bigger dudes. And then Tomowa and Kelby Collins and Troy Pikes and Aiden Harris, they're kind of the 280-ish guys out there. And Christian Ingram is the bigger guy on the nose. Yeah, so you have a lot of both, and they all do have different strengths and weaknesses. Now, who will be the starter? I would project Gabriel Brownlow Dindy and Dura Jaye as the starters right now, with Pikes and Collins or Thomas backing them up. But you know, Kelby Collins is a veteran, man. He could end up starting. There'll be some battles. Some big battles there. I think Noah Clark's going to probably get some playing time too, along with Aiden Harris as true freshman. So, and we'll see how it all plays out. You know, Christian Ingram is a developmental guy that's working very hard. Caleb Williams has to get healthy. And really, you could probably start to see what he could do. But it's a good group. Let's not get it twisted. This is a good group. And, you know, you got to be happy with what Travion Robertson's done with the room. But that's only part of your front seven. All right, so can this front seven be ferocious? That's the question, and I think you need that in the SEC and in college football. That's so beneficial. You know, when you have a really good front on defense, you can freaking ball because the secondary, and again, I'm not going to say all summer, oh, well, Torian Gray's just got this, you know, because the minute we say that around here, I still remember the 2018 season quite well. Everybody was hyped about the offense, and rightfully so. They had a new system. Jake Bentley was better. I mean, that team, when Bentley was on, they could score points. I mean, you saw it against Clemson and many other schools, against everybody, just because the plan was better, and they had ball players. You know, you had Debo Samuel back, Brian Edwards, Shai Smith. I mean, that was a good group. Rico Dowdle, Tyson Williams at running back. It was good. Even Keel Pollard at tight end played pretty well that year. But, you know, everybody said all summer, well, Muschamp's got the defense. He's a defensive guy. And the last 2 years, his first 2 years, defense was pretty salty. Well, we didn't account for injuries to DJ Wonnum. We didn't make massive injuries on that side of the ball. And then some guys that had left after 17, like Sawyer and Taylor Stallworth up front, they missed those guys. You know, they still weren't great at linebacker. I mean, it was safety was an issue. I mean, and by the end of the year, they gave up 700 yards and 56 points to Clemson. National champion Clemson. But Clemson, nonetheless, could not stop them and had walk-ons going in and out. So I learned my lesson. Never just say they've got it, no matter how good a coach is back there. But Torian Gray does deserve, you know, some deference there. And they do have players. It's not like, you know, that year in 18 where there were holes because of departures, big holes. But it helps your secondary when your front seven is good because you got pressure. You're rushing. It forces quarterbacks to make mistakes. You're pretty good at stopping the run. You know, you don't get leaky. I mean, we saw it in 24. You know, Carolina's secondary was pretty good in 24. Don't get me wrong. But the front was the difference. You could not block T.J. Sanders and Kyle Kennard and Dylan Stewart and Taka Hemingway. And then Boogie Huntley would get in there, and he had his best year. I mentioned Jules earlier. You know, Monkel Goodwin was stealing snaps at the end of that season. It was a situation where – and then linebacker – Demetrius Knight was fast as he was, and then a veteran in Debo Williams and a veteran in Bam Martin Scott. I mean, that was a ferocious front. So can Carolina get there this year? Clayton White keeps talking up his linebackers a lot more than last season. Maybe I was a year ahead of myself with the linebackers. Justin Okoronkwo seems to have taken a step forward, as has Fred Johnson. I heard from a contact yesterday that they're very pleased with Sean Murphy. He's carried over into spring what we started seeing down the stretch. You know, he was a guy, highly rated recruit, went to Bama, didn't get the playing time he wanted out of the state of Virginia. And then he's from Manassas, by the way. So he is, there is, I always talk about Carolina's recruiting primarily being 757 in the Richmond area, but that's a Nova kid, so that's a Northern Virginia kid. And Alabama under Saban recruited very well in that area. And, you know, went to Florida State, stayed hurt half the year, then finished pretty well. Didn't get off to a great start at Carolina, I didn't think. I mean, there were some games where, you know, I sort of wondered and all that. But then about halfway through the year, he started playing well. And I'll say it again, the missed tackle on Marcel Reed at A&M notwithstanding. But he started playing like Sean Murphy was supposed to start playing. And he's not only come a million miles as far as a player, but you take that and then he's developed as a natural leader for this team. So they're going to rotate all three. Uncle Runkle said the other day that in addition to Fred Johnson playing two positions, they all are training at both. So you just rotate them in and out. And that's awesome to have three guys like that at linebacker. You know, edge, it's very important to have Dylan Stewart back and healthy. I use the word back, you know, with a back, you just never know. You know, I don't want to sit here and I can tell you that everybody believes he'll be back. He believes he'll be back. His doctors believe he'll be back, but it's a back. You don't mess around with that. And then, you know, and that's one of the reasons they shut him down because he has to just get totally healthy out there. And with the way Dylan plays, with the bending, I mean, it's like Gumby. He just bends and dips and all that. You need your back for that, obviously. And that's the worst thing that could happen is to have back problems, especially as a football player. But he needs time to heal, and we'll see how it goes. And, you know, but they need him. They need him to be the guy that he's always been and not, you know, hurt, banged up, half speed. I don't want to say half speed because, I mean, but inconsistent with his speed. I mean, you know, he was playing through a lot of pain last year and probably good for one or two plays. Dylan Stewart plays a game. One of those was against A&M where he just shot past the guy and hit Marcel Reed and Nick Barrett got a big man touchdown. That was Dylan Stewart. That's the Dylan Stewart you need over and over. Caleb Herring is doing well. I mentioned the other day, he's kind of a freaky guy. You've heard about Julian Walker. Anthony Addison is a player that I keep hearing good things about. So if you get Dylan back, there's your four kind of ish rotation. Quay Dodd could factor in as well. Drew Collins, I heard for the first time some good things about the transfer from Arkansas State. So, you know, I think Edge is going to be fine. Deion Barnes, you know, probably has been repping these four guys, probably sick of looking at them, wants to see some of the other guys. And so we'll see what happens. When George Wilson, if he can get back, you know, heard a lot of good things about him last preseason. You know, he transferred in from Campbell, pass rusher type guy. Yeah, so those are the three levels of it. And, you know, if you look at the personnel and you kind of look at the track record, you look at the coaches coaching them, Deion Barnes, Travion Robertson, Trey Money, Clayton White, they all have track records there. You know, I think South Carolina's front could be, you know, on paper it is, but it could be execution and performance wise, pretty salty this year. And that's important. As we know, in the Southeastern Conference. And finally, you know, everybody's asked, it's kind of in vogue to ask the defense about the offense about the defense in the spring, which is fine. So Clayton White was asked about the tempo and Kendall Briles, who goes, you know, tries to go relatively fast, much faster than last year. Let's just put it that way. And so I started thinking about it, and I was like, well, you know, that's good that they see it. They're not going to see it every game, but, you know, let's dig into the schedule for a moment. And, you know, Towson and Kent, I don't know what exactly they'll do. I think Kent has some tempo. I don't know about Towson. I'll figure them out later. Let's take the 10, the 9 plus Clemson. So there are six teams on the schedule that run some sort of tempo. that like to go fast. Starting with Mississippi State, that's sort of identical to South Carolina because that's Kendall Briles' brother-in-law that's the head coach and running the offense there. And I think they also just hired Philip Montgomery, from Virginia Tech, who was there last year as their interim head coach. He's a Briles guy. So they're the same. They got a dual threat quarterback too. Tennessee, we know that they go very fast. Clemson with Chad Morris coming back, I believe they'll go tempo again. Arkansas with Ryan Silverfield, they were tempo team at Memphis. Oklahoma, I believe they will go fast. They went fast last year. That's an air raid guy. And then Kentucky with Will Stein, their tempo. So that's six of the 10. Florida's not going to go tempo with Buster Faulkner. That's kind of a little bit of a different type of scheme. They do it sometimes at Georgia Tech. Georgia's got Mike Bobo, Alabama's Kalen DeBoer and Ryan Grubb, whatever they do. And then A&M promoted from within. So I'm assuming the offense is just going to be the same old school Kansas State type of deal with Marcel Reed and all that. I wouldn't call them tempo teams, but 60%. And then the other four can go fast at times. So I think this is going to help prepare. And Clayton White mentioned this, the mental side of the defense for the schedule. And kind of like Randy Clements, offensive line coach, says, you need to simulate stuff in practice you can see in games. And so I think it's overwhelming, another positive for Kendall Briles coming in and running this offense is that it's going to prepare the defense to face tempo for 60% of your tough schedule next year. So that's a good thing. Just to wrap it up, I think that, the front is definitely something that you circle, given the players back, size, speed, combo, and all that good stuff. It could develop into a strength of the team. And again, you got to get Stewart back to kind of make this dream a reality. I think it'll happen. I think it'll be fun. If there's the time to worry more so will be in the preseason than right now on that. But he's tracking to be back. So is Jacarius Peake on offense. But, just the personnel there and knowing what you know and all that. I think that if you're looking for one part of the defense or one subsection of the defense to return to the 2024 form, this front's got the best chance to do so. All right. I'll be along around 11 with Mad Dog, and Rob will be there, and Matt will be there on ITG special today. Preston Thorne is in today. And again, we're going combo show special all week. Look for the newsletter here in a little bit. Transfer portal's open in basketball, folks. This has been JC Sherbert's Coffee. Holla at you soon.